As a new presidential administration begins, WEKU and Eastern Standard are participating in A Nation Engaged. We're interested in knowing what you want from the incoming administration. What do you want the president to know about you and your community and about Kentuckians? Do you think the country is more divided than ever? We do have guests in the studio, including the insights of a professor of U.S. political history at the University of Kentucky, Mark Summers. One of the things he's written about is political cartoons.
You'll find Thomas Jefferson seen as a dangerous atheist and a radical, trying to pull down the pillars of government. If you look at cartoons of James Buchanan, there are more than a coincidental number of him dressed in women's clothing as an old granny.
We're interested in hearing from you. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. Post on the WEKU Facebook page or the website. In a few minutes, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. As a new president is inaugurated this week, we are participating in the effort called A Nation Engaged. We're interested in hearing from our listeners, and we're really going to push for your input on this week's program from right at the very beginning of the show. We want to hear what you want from the incoming administration. What do you want the president to know about you and your community, about Kentuckians? Do you think the country is more divided than ever is another major question that we will address during our conversation today. Please write to us right now at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can post your comment on the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. Our toll-free number that you are invited to call right now, 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Now, as usual, we do have guests with us to discuss our topic. And first up in our studio, we have with us Dr. Ellen Cox, who is a professor of philosophy and women's gender at Transylvania University in Lexington. She has degrees, including her PhD from DePaul University. Ellen Cox, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
On the phone line, we have with us Joshua Douglas. Professor Douglas teaches and researches election law and voting rights at the University of Kentucky. Professor Douglas, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
And also on Skype, we have Dr. Karsanya, or Kay Whitehead. And Dr. Whitehead is associate professor in the Department of Communication at Loyola University, Maryland, founding executive director of the Emily Frances Davis Center for Education, Research, and Culture. Dr. Whitehead, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. And we'll keep all of your microphones on throughout the show, folks, so please be aware that you're on the air and you can interact with us at any time. Jump in. When we get some callers on the line, feel free to interact with them directly. I want to begin, and oh, by the way, we're going to also hear some comments from Professor Mark Summers at the University of Kentucky. We'll get to the first segment of his recorded comments in just a moment, but let me toss out here to our guests in the studio your reactions to this little lineup of questions that we're posing. NPR's programming, On Point, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, have all been doing stories on this topic of what we want to say to the incoming administration and what about the nation being a divided nation. Let me start with Ellen Cox, and she's right here in the studio.
Well, I think these are very important questions to be raising. Actually, in some of the work that I do with undergraduates at Transylvania, I asked the students to compose a letter to President Trump expressing the concerns that they hoped he would address in his inaugural address. Mm. And most of them talked about their hopes and their fears, the things that they were most looking forward to under this new administration, as well as the concerns that they had. I think many of those related to the extremely contentious and divisive nature of the campaign.
Can you think of some specific comments that your students made?
I think that the term healing came up quite a bit, that students who expressed that they had supported Donald Trump also recognized that there had been some damage done and that this was something he would need to attend to in order to have unity. That was another theme that many of the students expressed.
Let me turn to Professor Josh Douglas at the University of Kentucky. Your reaction to these questions and to this overall theme of a divided nation.
Yeah, I think that what they demonstrate is that the election didn't do anything to bring us together as a country, but perhaps made things even more divisive. And so now we're looking for ways to heal some of those wounds inflicted by the campaign and really the rhetoric on both sides. This is one of the most contentious elections when it came to character assassination. And I think the need to ask these questions reflects that reality.
Dr. Kay Whitehead, do you want to weigh in on the same question?
I do, because I think these are very interesting questions to consider. Much like your first guest, I also had students, I had K through 12th grade students working on this question, asking teachers to have them think about two questions, what President Trump should do first and what I wish President Trump knew. And we are taking the students' questions and answers and putting them as tweets, and we'll be tweeting out throughout the Inauguration Day weekend about what K through 12th grade students really want the president to work on and what they want him to know. I think this notion of a divided nation is something that greatly concerns me, because for many of us, particularly those of us within the Black and Brown community, we believe the nation has been divided for a long time. It didn't just start with this campaign of Donald Trump. And even if Donald Trump were to make concessions to bring other people to the table, it won't end. This notion of divisiveness, the ways in which we wrestle with race and class and gender in this country, have been happening for a long time. And for a lot of people within the community, it's not as if things have changed. We look at pictures of the inner city communities. We look at the pictures, you know, after Bush, after Clinton, after Obama, the communities still look the same. It was under President Obama that we saw the birth of the movement for Black Lives. So I don't know if the divisiveness that people are talking about is something that holds true within communities that have already felt very marginalized within this society. Perhaps it's within the white community where they're starting to recognize a divisiveness. But we've been talking and writing and marching about this divisiveness for a very long time.
Dr. Kay Whitehead is with us on this week's Eastern Standard. Professor Joshua Douglas and Dr. Ellen Ellen Cox. I've got so many pieces of paper in front of me here. We're interested in hearing from you, our listeners, on this week's program. A Nation Engaged, what do you want the presidential administration, President Trump, to know about you, about Kentucky? What are your concerns, your issues? What do you think about this issue of a divided nation? Please feel free to get on the line right now, 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet, post on Facebook or the website, especially after the live broadcast. The show is live on Thursday morning. Now let's turn briefly to Mark Summers. He's a professor of U.S. political history at the University of Kentucky, and I spoke with him earlier this week. One of the things he's done discussing presidential history, has written about political cartoonists, newspaper cartoonists, and their criticisms and their interactions with the presidents over the years.
In terms of understanding a period, there's no better way of understanding a period than going back to newspapers, say, from the 1940s or 30s, and just looking at the political cartoons to see how events interconnect with each other and the like.
This week, we're talking about the inauguration of a man who has proven to be not very comfortable with criticism, to put it mildly, I guess, who is not comfortable with being challenged by the press. How do you think President Donald Trump will react to political cartoons that may be critical of him in his administration?
Well, I think he'll probably be so much on Twitter dealing with them, he'll never have any time to do any policy, my guess is. I mean, there's enough cartoonists out there that's possible.
Historically, what has been the relationship between presidents and social commentators, specifically political cartoonists? Have there been some tense relations between presidents and those folks?
Well, most of the presidents, if they had their choice of enemies, probably would choose political cartoonists, because cartoonists essentially define them for who they are. The most famous case of that is really Herb Block, the great cartoonist of the 1950s and 60s, and Richard Nixon. See, he saw Nixon as a person basically rather sleazy and slimy of character. So we drew him almost all the time up to the 19th through the 60s with a 5 o'clock shadow, kind of seedy, unshaven, and unscrupulous. When Nixon won the presidency, Herblock, being a good sport, did a kind of put a barber's chair in his own office in a cartoon and put up a sign that said this establishment gives a free shave to anybody elected to the presidency. And so the 5 o'clock shadow never came back.
Wow.
But I mean, cartoonists can be often pretty scathing of sorts in ways that certainly until recently were kind of off limits. If you go back to, say, the early 1800s, you'll find Thomas Jefferson seen as a dangerous atheist and a radical, trying to pull down the pillars of government, trying to burn the Constitution on the altar of what was called Gallic despotism before the American Eagle can stop him. Ferocious cartoons. If you look at cartoons of James Buchanan, there are more than a coincidental number of them of him dressed in women's clothing as an old granny. One of the undercurrents being the rumor, not substantiated, that his proclivities were not exactly heterosexual. If you look at Lincoln, there's a ferociously ugly cartoon that shows him out on a battlefield of the dead and saying to his associate, now sing us Picayune Butler or something else that's funny. Cartoonists could be pretty ferocious characters.
Very much.
There was one kind of limitation, and that's a limitation that I think has worn off by this time, which is if a president had a physical handicap of any kind, the cartoonist, that was off limits. You can accuse him of being a traitor. You can accuse him of being a drunk. But if he's got a physical defect, you don't bring it up. I'll give you an example. The best example out there is something like Franklin Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Franklin Roosevelt was paralyzed in his legs, infantile paralysis. Oh, he walked with braces. He stood up with great difficulty. And a lot of cartoonists were just savage on him. The Chicago Tribune absolutely hated him. They saw him as a front for the communists. They saw him as the worst of liars. They accused him of getting into unnecessary wars with people like the Germans and the like. But you look through all of their cartoons, which are nasty beyond belief, and none of them even give a hint that this is a person that has polio.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and that is Professor Mark Summers, the University of Kentucky, and he writes about and teaches about U.S. political history at UK. And we're going to hear a few more remarks from Mark Summers. I spoke with him earlier this week. With us in the studio also are Dr. Ellen Cox, who is a professor of philosophy and women's gender and sexuality issues at Transylvania. On Skype, Dr. Kay Whitehead, and also on the phone line is Dr. Josh Douglas, or Professor Josh Douglas at the University of Kentucky, teaches and researches election law, voting rights, civil procedure, constitutional law, judicial decision making. We're interested in your comments about the incoming presidential administration, and we want to know what you want the president to know about you, about your community, about Kentucky. We are interested in your comments about this being a divided nation as well. Get on board. We do have a caller waiting on the line. We hope to get to him shortly. 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can send a tweet at WEKUEST or post on the Facebook page or the WEKU website. Even if you're listening to the encore or listening to the podcast, feel free to post there. This is Eastern Standard on WEKU. It's Eastern Standard, a nation engaged. We're asking our listeners to interact with us on your hopes, wishes, desires of the president coming into office this week. We're interested in knowing what you think about this divided nation. It's pretty demonstrable by pretty much a lot of different ways that's able to be demonstrated. We have guests with us in the studio, or actually in some fashion live with us in the studio is Dr. Ellen Cox of Transylvania, Dr. Kay Whitehead of Loyola University, Maryland, Josh Douglas of the University of Kentucky, and we have some recorded comments from Mark Summers of UK. We have promised we'll get listeners on the air, and we do want to do that right away. 800-621-8890 is the number. Let's talk to Henry from Midway with your comments. Henry, thanks for being the first to call in today. Are you there, Henry?
I just wanted to point out that I've never seen it more divided than this.
Talk a little bit about the division, how you see the division. Certainly, you know, in terms of the vote, I mean, the popular vote, what did Hillary Clinton get, something like 3 million more votes than Trump? So the electoral vote, of course, went in Trump's direction. I know the polls are showing what they call the favorability ratings or whatever for the incoming approval rating. 40%, I think, was the last number I saw for incoming President Trump. Oh, he's gone. Okay. All right, Henry, thank you. He's never seen it more divided than he sees it now. Ellen Cox, your reaction to that.
Well, one thing that I think doesn't maybe get as much attention in terms of the divisiveness is the growing inequality, I think income inequality in this country, that is also a reflection of the sort of polarization of people's experiences. And I think that came out in this most recent election.
Josh Douglas?
Yeah, I mean, I think that although, you know, we have for years have had divisiveness, I think in some ways social media is helping to embellish that. And then we have the president-elect who uses Twitter to attack others and to increase. So, you know, what we've seen since Election Day, we had a very divided Election Day, but what we've seen in the 2 months since is a continuation of this. And I think in large part because of social media and what the president-elect has done.
And Kay Whitehead.
I think we have a lot of feedback from people saying that they've never seen it more divided. And it feels as if people are not taking a long arm look at history. They're trying to only look at this as one single moment and begin to really deconstruct it. I think we have to put it in its proper place. Divisiveness is something that runs through the country. I'm trying to think of a time in our modern history when we weren't divided. I mean, people argue that perhaps that moment when Barack Obama was first elected in 2008 was a time when we had come together as a nation. And when they say that, then they fail to realize all of the divisiveness that was taking place even while he was being inaugurated. It's almost as if people are expecting this nation to have been this big, happy place where everybody agreed, everybody came together, everybody was equal, and we did not have this very deep class and race and gender divide. And when they do that, I challenge them to tell me where they're getting this information from, because that is not the America that we're living in, one where we are now all of a sudden more divided than ever. We have been divided, and I stand on that.
Before we go back to the phone, I'm wondering how you all feel about the mood of the country going into this inauguration. Our show is live, of course, on Thursday, the day before the inaugural ceremonies, and there have been a lot of discussion about the ceremonies themselves, that Mr. Trump has not been able to get a lot of high-profile A-list talent to participate in the inauguration. There are elected officials. Kentucky's own, the one Democrat representative to the House of Representatives, John Yarmuth of the Louisville area, 3rd District, not going to the inauguration. It seems that in the past, we've always tried to come together around inauguration and tried to anticipate the best and expect the best out of the incoming president. It seems like there are an awful lot of people who have absolutely no expectations of good things coming out of this administration.
Yeah, I think that there is what I think is very fascinating is a sort of unwillingness to be associated with this president, even by people who seem to support him. That's something that I perceived in the time running up to the election in conversations with students and more broadly. And I think some also felt that there was a secret sort of Trump vote that accounted for the, you know, what some thought was the very surprising news the day after the election that Trump indeed had been elected. So in terms of the fanfare and the sort of symbolic unity that the inauguration has historically generated, I think that there is a kind of caution and reluctance to be associated with this administration.
Let me ask Kay Whitehead and Josh Douglas to chime in.
Okay, well, hopefully I sound a little bit better. I've come off my headphones and maybe there won't be as much feedback.
Oh, that sounds so much better, Kay.
Sounds
thank
much
you
better.
So much.
Excellent. I am happy about that. Well, what's interesting when people talk about the mood, I think there are two points I'd like to make. One is that it's not new. If you go back to the second time that President Obama was inaugurated, there was a huge story running through the newspapers about all of the Republicans who were leaving town, who chose not to participate. You know, Bush 1 nor 2 were there. So this notion of people from the different party not attending the inauguration is not new. Uh-huh. I think when Trump started to get into that debate back and forth with John Lewis, and John Lewis made the public statement that he wasn't coming, and the list began to grow. I think it's up to 60 now. And there are a number of people who are putting pressure on their mayors and on their representatives not to attend, not to stand in solidarity with what's taking place in Washington, D.C. I think at the same time, it's a very electric environment because people are organizing. I mean, we're talking about the Women's March, which is going to take place on Saturday, not just in Washington, D.C., but there are 370 sister marches happening around the country and around the world to stand in opposition to policies that might be put forth by this administration. So even though people are talking about the mood in Washington, I am excited that people are starting to realize that they have a voice and they have a constitutional right to petition the government for redress of grievances, to peacefully assemble, to raise their voices and push back if the person who is in power and the people that are in power are not helping to create the America that they want to live in.
Josh Douglas.
Well, I think that she's right that the device of this is not necessarily unique. One thing I think is different is that this president-elect has not done really anything to try to bring people together. So if you do look at past election cycles, after the election, you'd had both major candidates have a meeting. You'd have the winning candidate talk about trying to get some unity and bring people together. And Donald Trump did that during his 2 or 3 a.m. election night speech after Clinton conceded, and it was clear who's going to win. I thought it was a great speech in trying to say we're going to bring people together, but I don't think that's happened since then very much. Instead, he's gone on the attack for anyone who has criticized him. And so I think it has to start from the top, and so it'll be really interesting to see what his message tomorrow is in his inaugural speech. Is he going to try to bring people together? Because I think that type of leadership has been lacking since election night when he started out that way, but didn't continue.
We're counting on our listeners participating in this week's show. Tell us what you want from the incoming administration. What do you want the president to know about you and about your community, about Kentuckians? Do you think this country is more divided than ever? 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet if you can keep your message in 140 characters. That's not all bad necessarily. At WEKUEST. Post on Facebook or the WEKU website. We may not get some of those comments on the air, but they'll be out there for others to view and to interact with you. Again, that phone number, 800-621-8890. Thank you, Gus from Winchester, for calling in. Go right ahead. Are you there, Gus?
Oh, my name's Heather.
Oh, I'm sorry, Heather. I don't know how we got that confused.
That's okay.
But go right ahead.
I just wanted to say that, yes, we can look back in history and there's always been, a tumultuous time around different leaders. But I feel like this is the only time where I felt like an election almost ripped my family apart. Like, we can usually talk about our differences and see eye to eye, but it was hard to get my mind around my family supporting someone who seems to have no moral compass whatsoever. So that's where the difference of opinion is mattering on the family line.
Heather, you're in Madison. You're in Madison County. I'm sorry again. Sorry for the confusion. So when you talk about the difference of this president incoming, How will this affect your reaction to the inauguration? I mean, I know a lot of folks on Inauguration Day will make a point of trying to follow the activities, to watch the parade, to watch the inaugural address, participate in it. I've seen all kinds of conversations on, of course, you know, we see what we want to see a lot of times on Facebook, but I've seen conversations about people saying they're going to bow out from it, they're going to do a movie, they're going to find some alternative activity to do. What does Inauguration Day look like to you tomorrow as a result of this presidency?
I know a lot of people have talked about not watching it to kind of make a statement, but if you watch it or not, it's still going to happen, and it's a part of our history. So I'm going to watch it just because I want to be I just want to know what's going on in my country, and I care about that. But I do feel a very real feeling of hopelessness that I've never felt in my 34 years, just a complete sense of terror about what's going to happen, because I don't have any faith, a zero level of faith in this president that's incoming, and I've never been at that place before.
I'm going to turn to Kay Whitehead to respond to Heather here. Kay, you were saying something a moment ago about what I heard was a glimmer of hope in your comments.
Yes, well, I kind of want to kind of unpack something that she said. First, I want to respond that I will not be watching the inauguration tomorrow because I am organizing and have organized an anti-inauguration Trump teach-in. I created Trump Syllabus K-12 where teachers around the country, and I've challenged them to use their classroom and use it as a point to begin talking about what it means to be an active citizen, to not just sit in front of the TV and veg, but use this as an opportunity to begin to get mobilized and think about the ways in which we can speak into this moment with what's happening. Don't walk out, teach it. Like, use it as a space where we're talking about these issues and we're engaging with them in a deeper place. People are feeling hurt, they're feeling lost, they're feeling adrift. Do a teach-in, talk about it, plan, and be effective. And number two, this feeling of feeling hopeless, again, I would argue for Black and brown people, the feeling of hopelessness is not new. When I sit with my white female colleague allies and they tell me how they're feeling afraid, how they're feeling adrift, how they don't know what to do, how they feel that they're under attack, I'm like, this is what Black and brown people have been saying in this country for a long time. It's how we feel every day. So having Obama in the office, having Trump in the office, having Clinton in the office, it still translates on the ground to Black and brown people having to struggle, feeling like we're under attack, feeling like our lives are safe, feeling like we are adrift, and we still don't feel hopeless because we understand in order for power to concede, you have to stand up and you have to organize it. So no, I will not be watching it, but yes, I will be organizing. No, I don't feel hopeless. I feel hopeful because we have survived Reaganomics. We've survived crack cocaine. We've survived Jim Crow. We will survive Donald Trump, and we will be better because of it.
Wow, some enthusiasm there. Kay Whitehead, thank you. And thank you, Heather, for your call. Our goal is to get some listener interactions in this week's show. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet if you choose, at WEKUEST. Use that Twitter feed, at WEKUEST. Let's try for Gus, this time from Winchester. Sorry for the confusion between Heather and Gus a few minutes ago. Are you there, Gus?
I am here.
Go right ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to make the comment, as a young Kentucky Democrat, I feel that our state constantly votes against its own self-interest. And what I'd like the incoming administration to know is that young Kentuckians such as myself, I'm going to work every single day to make sure we are informed and ready to go and elect a president who is actually worker-friendly. I come from coal country. I've seen what happens when big corporations come in and take your mountaintops and leave sickness and poverty. And what little we know about Donald Trump's actual policy, he seems to be surrounding himself with the very people that would do that to us again.
Again, the theme or the question we've been asking people to express is, what do you want President Trump to hear? What do you want President Trump to know about yourself, about Kentucky, about our needs and our wants? I mean, Gus, if you had the opportunity to express your needs or wants to President Trump, what would you say to him?
I would say our needs as a state, we need affordable health coverage, obviously, with some of the highest cancer rates in the whole country. We need good paying jobs. And if you bring $7.25 jobs en masse to the country. That's not helping anyone. We need a living wage. We need unions. And that trickles down to our current state administration, which is also terrible. I think as a whole, I will hope the president can bring good paying jobs and affordable health coverage to Kentuckians, but I just don't see that happening.
What do you think about candidate Donald Trump's promises that we're going to bring the coal jobs back? Going to make that happen? It's going to be great.
As a 23-year-old, and I know that coal's not coming back. Senator McConnell knows that coal's not coming back. Everyone knows that coal's not coming back. It's a fun pop dream, but I just don't see it happening.
All right. Thank you so much, Gus, for getting back on the line and being part of our conversation. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Let me ask our other guests. We have on the line Josh Douglas from the University of Kentucky. We have on Skype Dr. Kay Whitehead, and in the studio, Dr. Ellen Cox. Anyone want to chime in on what you've heard from our listeners so far? Feel free.
Well, I'm happy to comment on Gus's point about voters voting against their own interests. I think that that's a common theme that I've heard a lot in some of the surprise and criticism over the outcome of the election. And I think it's interesting to think about how the sort of Democratic or the liberal left may also not have attended to the interests of the particular groups of people that were expressing their frustration, particularly over wages, over the disappearance of jobs overseas, and so forth. So I think that this can be an important lesson for all of us to think about whose interests really do or have been represented in Washington. And I know that Kay Whitehead has made a very good point about sort of the race and class dimensions of the status quo and how new people may for the first time be feeling disenfranchised. And so it may seem more like a crisis at this point, but for many Americans, this kind of exclusion has existed for quite some time.
Josh Douglas, I know you teach and research election law and voting rights, civil procedure, et cetera. You've got 30 seconds before our station break.
Well, yeah, I hope this is a topic we can come back to, but
sure.
The right to vote is so important. And, you know, our turnout is, in my view, abysmal when you have just over half the electorate voting. And if you look at 18 to 24-year-olds, the turnout is extremely small. And so we need to fix our voting process to get more people engaged and more people voting. And like I said, hopefully we can explore that topic some more, because I think it's vitally important to the entire endeavor over the next 4 years and beyond.
We'll come back to that immediately following this station break, as we encourage listeners to call 800-621-8890. What do you want the Trump administration to know about yourself, about Kentucky, your hopes, your dreams, your fears and concerns? What do you think about this as being the most divided nation ever? 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. And as we, on this Thursday, are preparing for the inauguration of President Donald Trump tomorrow, we're asking our listeners to participate in A Nation Engaged. Your comments, your reaction to questions about what do you want President Donald Trump to know about you, about Kentucky, and your hopes, your fears, and your dreams. What do you think about this being a divided nation as a result of this election? Or is it a result of this election or something deeper than just the most recent election? 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. We'll accept Twitter tweets, of course, at WEKUEST, post on Facebook or the website. And before we go back to the phone lines, we do have a couple of callers waiting on the line. Back to Josh Douglas talking about fixing the voting system, the election system in the country. Talk about what you're thinking about specifically here.
Well, there's lots of things we can do, but the first thing I want to point out is it is somewhat frustrating for me to hear people after the election talking about doing calls to action. We need to do more. Of course, that is great, and I'm not frustrated they're doing that, but I do ask, where were they in October? Where were they on November 8th? Did they go out to vote? If this is what's moving them to start doing that now, that's wonderful, and I hope they sustain that for the next election and beyond. But we we do need to engage people to turn out the vote. There are lots of things we can do to make voting easier. In Kentucky, I fully support moving towards early voting, expand the opportunities to vote. Right, you know, right now, we're one of the states that has the fewest voting hours, open 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. on election day. Let's expand the ability to vote. Let's make it easier. Let's encourage people to have more engagement and outreach, particularly among our young communities. Let's fix our high school civics education to instill the importance of participating in our democracy so that when people do turn 18, they're ready and raring to go. You know, there are political science studies that say one of the biggest predictors of whether you're going to vote is whether you voted in the previous election. Voting is habit forming. So let's come up with policies and ways to start the process earlier. I really think with more people participating, this could solve at least some of the problems that we're seeing.
What do you think about the possibility of changing or abolishing the Electoral College? We had at least a couple of elections in most of our lifetime here, this one and the one, of course, in which Kerry and I guess was it Bush and Kerry was down to the wire, and of course the vote counting and the notorious vote counting and the hanging chads in Florida and all that sort of stuff. I mean, is it realistic to think we might change the way we technically elect the president?
I don't think it's realistic right now under our current political environment. You need either a constitutional amendment, which is extremely hard to pass. You need to get 2/3 of Congress and 3/4 of states to agree, or you need to, there's a workaround that's working through some of the states called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, which basically says instead of awarding our electoral votes to who wins our state, we'll award them to whoever wins the popular vote. The problem right now is that politically, Republicans are winning under the system. They've won two of the past 5 presidential elections by winning the Electoral College, even though their candidate did not win the popular vote. And so until we have an election where a Republican wins the popular vote but does not win the Electoral College, I think change on that is going to be difficult to achieve.
Let's go to the phone, as we promised. We're encouraging listeners to participate in this week's show at 800-621-8890. Let's talk to Sharman from Harrodsburg. Do I have that name correct?
Sherman.
Sherman, thank you. Thank you for being on the line. Go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have so many things I want to say. First, I want to thank Dr. Whitehead so much. She has inspired me very, very greatly. And so has Gus, knowing that he's a 23-year-old who's really interested in the political process. I did not vote for Donald Trump, and I was very upset when he was elected. And I spent a couple of weeks sort of mired in hopelessness, and then I thought to myself, hey, there's something I can do. I can volunteer. I can try to make my community better. So that's what I've done since November, is find a couple of organizations that I can give my time and energy to help those who are not experiencing the American dream because of their color, because of their class, whatever. So that's something that my hope is that other members of the community will look around themselves to see how they can better their community as a response to what looks to be like racism, misogynistic behavior, you know, anti-Muslim behavior, et cetera, et cetera. What I would like Donald Trump to know is that 60% of us who did not vote for him are watching, and we are going to be aware of the choices that he makes and the kinds of rhetoric that he puts out there, and we're going to call him to account. So I want him to know that he doesn't have carte blanche. Tweets do not protect him from an informed electorate observing what his motives are. So I think that's pretty much what I want to say.
Sherman, thank you so much for your call from Harrodsburg this morning on Eastern Standard, 800-621-8890. We're going to go back to the phone in just a second. I want to acknowledge a caller who did not stay on the line. Mr. Creech says, under the present administration, they are closing the Pineville Hospital as of today. They closed all the coal out, and Trump is supposed to put it back. He says, I'm a Democrat, but now I don't know anymore. As a matter of fact, further comment says that he now feels the word Democrat makes him sick, but he doesn't support Trump either. All right, Mr. Creech, thank you so much for passing along your comment. Let's go to Lynn from Whitesburg. Lynn, are you there?
I'm here.
Go right ahead.
Hi. So one of the speakers articulated that, you know, there's a lot of different structural problems to getting out the vote, particularly for Democrats, but in general. So in Kentucky, you know, this was a party that, like most parties in the United States, state Democrats contributed more nationally than they received. Due to the fact that Kentucky was like a battleground state legislature, they still gave more money out than they like got or get out the vote drives or anything. Democrats across the nation have lost over 900 or 1,000 state legislative seats over the past 8 years. We're talking a lot about all the sorts of legal ways that in a perfect world, we could get out the vote better. But what exactly can be done by state Democrats across the nation to like reform their party so they're actually like getting funding into places that more effectively and running people in legislative places more effectively and actually, you know, competing? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. That was Gabe, actually, from Lexington. Thank you, Gabe, for your call. And I think that question is directed pretty much at Josh Douglas.
Yeah, thanks, Gabe. That's an important question. One of the things that's really important is to focus on state legislative races. Republicans did a very good job in 2008 and really 2010 of winning legislative seats. The reason that's important is because come 2020, we're going to be redrawing the lines, redrawing maps for state legislature as well as Congress. And in most states, it's the state legislature that draws the maps that does redistricting for both Congress and for state legislature. And both sides gerrymander very egregiously. Republicans have done a much better job of it right now. So you identified as a Democrat who wants to help the Democratic Party, one of the things to do is to try to play the game better than Republicans did. Now, my own personal belief is that gerrymandering on either side is wrongful. There is a court case that's making its way to the U.S. Supreme Court in which the court might finally recognize that partisan gerrymandering is unlawful and provide a test for courts to determine when states have gone too far. But I think this is a really vitally important thing for Democrats to focus on is not so much the national picture, but the grassroots, local, state legislative picture, because then they can control the line drawing process.
Would you all agree, Josh or Kay or Ellen, that to a great extent, a lot of the reason for the Trump election is that people are upset with gerrymandering? They're upset with gridlock in Congress between the Congress and the presidency. They're upset with the way the system has worked, the fact that there are no term limitations, that people get into office and stay in office for 37 years or whatever. I mean, isn't that part of what the movement that brought Trump into office?
I think that's part of the frustration. I think what's interesting is that with people being frustrated, being upset about gerrymandering, being upset about the no term limits, how does that then translate into not participating in the process? I mean, we have to be clear about the small number of people who actually participated in the election, and out of that number, those that voted for Donald Trump. I think that people's frustration, the way they acted out their frustration, almost like, in my opinion, like spoiled children who want to play with one toy when you tell them no, they don't want to play with any of the toys. You're upset about one piece of it, and then you don't participate. Those are the people that I think we need to be holding accountable. The actual act of not participating in the voting process does not put you in any position to be able to critique it, because you had a chance to make your voice heard and you did not do it. Now, I think the problem is with teaching young people about this, because I have students who said to me, well, we did vote. Based upon the popular vote, we got out, we showed the world who we wanted, with over 3 million people voting, over Donald Trump voting for Hillary Clinton. People said, we did vote for our candidate and our candidate didn't win. So how do we reconcile that? My hope is that it will help people to really force those in power to take another look at getting rid of the Electoral College. We were here before. Bush v. Gore was a case you were talking about. It happened then. We did not get rid of the Electoral College. We realized how difficult it was. We're back at this point now. Maybe with more pressure and a more concentrated effort, we can see that go by the way.
That's Kay Whitehead. In the studio is Ellen Cox.
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of frustration with the status quo, and we definitely saw that in the momentum that Bernie Sanders had going up through the primaries. And I think that, you know, part of the attrition in terms of voting, the folks who didn't turn up, Clinton, I think, wasn't their candidate. I think that Trump, in many ways, is an analog to Sanders in the sense that both candidates represented something other than the status quo. And when the Democrats put Hillary Clinton up as their candidate, I think a lot of people just felt like that just wasn't going to affect any real change in Washington.
Let's go back to the phone and talk to Eden from Lexington. Thank you for hanging on. Eden, go right ahead. Are you there, Eden? Apparently not. Okay, well, thank you for making the effort. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and our guests are here to encourage our listeners to participate in the conversation today, and we still have time for maybe a couple more calls if you'd like to get on the line at 800-621-8890, or not much time to send us an email, or if you'd like to send a tweet, send it at WEKUEST. Let's come back to these issues of divisiveness, a divided nation. I mean, let me ask our guests, all three of you, your reactions to this issue. I mean, was the election a cause of divisiveness in the nation, or was it an effect of divisiveness that has existed? I mean, the fact of the past eight years, some have praised President Obama, but some have said that the nation has been very divided, and that there has been, we've seen the gridlock that has occurred in Washington. Very little effort, very little activity, very little lawmaking being done in Congress, continual efforts by the Congress to stop efforts that Mr. Obama was trying to make along the way. The election, divisiveness, cause or effect? Josh.
I think it's an effect. I think the divisiveness was there already, and we're just seeing the fault line even more so. And I think part of this goes back to the failure to adhere to political norms on both sides, although I think Republicans have been better at it. You know, Obama came in part with a message of hope to bring the parties together and the country together, and he wasn't able to do that. But I think one reason is that the top Republicans made it their mission to defeat him at every turn, and in many ways did so successfully. I mean, you go from Mitch McConnell, who says that his number one goal was to ensure Obama was a one-term president, to the failed Supreme Court nomination of Merrick Garland, which, you know, the Republicans took a big political risk in trying to hold that seat open, and they were successful. And it really put Washington to a halt. The normal processes where the Senate considers the president's nominee. So I don't think the election caused this. I think it opened the fault line even more, and I think it's in large part because of the failure to adhere to the typical political norms that people going to office are expected to adhere to.
We might return to reactions on that question from Ellen and Kay, but let's go to the phone and talk to is this Mill from London, Kentucky, or line four? Hello, Mill, are you there?
Yes, my name is Neil.
Neil, thank you.
What do you do with stupid? Most people in the state of Kentucky were going on about issues that are not even connected to reality. They were getting news off of Facebook from InfoWars and places like that, and you couldn't show them otherwise. They had no critical thinking skills. And what do you do? That's the main reason they voted for Trump.
Anyone react? Ellen?
I think that, we have to think very carefully about the way that the media, I think the journalism is being taken on by this president. We know that this is a president who prefers to tweet rather than hold face-to-face press conferences. Who goes after media outlets or journalists who confront him or criticize him, and who also now has invoked this practice of calling news fake when it doesn't, when it's not flattering or supportive to him, which is not to say that there isn't a problem with, as Neil says, kind of the critical skills of consuming news in a smart way. But I think that, yeah, we need to be very careful and wary of Trump's relationship with the press going forward.
All right. Thank you. Let's turn to line five and talk to Amy from Lexington. Amy, are you there?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
It's a comment about the divisiveness of the country being directly caused by the election of Trump. Now, before the election, I was so firm in my belief that people would never vote for someone who was so openly hostile to so many groups in this country, to women, to Muslims, to Hispanics, to LGBT. And to see the election where so many people came out and voted for him, despite everything that he did and everything that he said, that makes me just, quite honestly, it makes me a little bit intolerant of these conservatives who voted for him. Makes me more hardened in my stance and makes me not really want to see both sides of it, because I see their side as being so anti and so frankly disgusting in what I think is the social standards of our time.
Amy, thank you for calling in. Let me very quickly, as we're wrapping up this week's show, let me get some very brief comments from Ellen, Faye, and Josh. Hope going forward. Where do you see hope, Ellen?
Well, I would agree with Kay on this one. I think that there is something energizing about the controversial and contentious nature of this presidency, and I hope that it will reinvigorate the democratic processes that have maybe been dormant for too long.
Josh Douglas?
Civics education, improving our educational system to instill the importance of participating in democracy, and then expanding the right to vote and fighting vigorously for easier access and expanded voting rights for everyone.
And Kay?
And the hope that we can begin to move forward as a nation, that we realize how much power we actually have, and that we do, as the caller just said a little while ago, we hold the people in our own community accountable for the things that they say and do and the candidates that they support.
Thank you, Josh Douglas, Ellen Cox, Kay Whitehead, and Mark Summers. And we heard briefly on this week's Eastern Standard, a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Of course, WEKU will have a live coverage of the inaugural ceremonies Friday from 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. Associate producers for Eastern Standard are Noah Day and Marissa Hempel. At the controls, Brian Bartlett. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thank you for joining us for this week's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.